score.
There's one rule.
And we're back on the back porch of the Persimmon Pub. Our last episode of the night. So this is usually where Scott and I kind of get to get deep a little bit, because there's not as many people left on the pub floor, and we can start kind of talking a little bit freely, which is it's not that we can't do it with you guys here, but you know, it opens up the window for us to conversate and really, really engage with the listeners who are listening to this podcast right now. Entertaining the people on the pub floor. So today we're talking about culture and how important culture is in developing a successful program and in whatever. To me, the first thing that comes to mind is college athletics, right? When who's a sports fan, and I'm assuming that if you're listening to this podcast, you're at least somewhat engaged in the sports forum. But culture is a big deal, especially when you're going to a lot of these college programs, college football programs, where they're recruiting you and they're trying to sell you based on certain aspects, right? So, for example, you know, Alabama, they really put an emphasis on not only their facilities, but their alumni that have gone on to play at a higher level, and saying you can be that too, right? Yep. And so I think when we're talking about transitioning kind of that idea shift into Franklin Bridge, you can really start to think about what Brooks has done to attract people to come here. So, you know, the first thing being the River Club, right? Best deal in golf. It's gotten people to come.
Literally the best deal in the golf.
It's literally the best deal in golf. But I mean, you come to, you know, it gets them to come to the club, right? Experience the club. Then they meet our awesome bartenders inside and decide that, you know, there's a social aspect to this thing. And now there's a bunch of people inside at, you know, 8:48 p.m. on a Wednesday night, you know, just hanging out, having drinks. Right. And so, you know, that culture is something that is infectious. Infectious or infectious, whatever it is.
Yep.
And, you know, just gets people, you know, coming back time and time again. And so I think what we're going to talk about here is talking about
your culture
that we're trying to create as far as the player development side, right, and how we're going to, you know, use the things that we've talked about in order to help people get better at golf.
Yep. And as we've kind of already mentioned in this second season of the Champions Playbook, almost 150 episodes deep in total, almost half of those from here at Franklin Bridge. So
I think I came in at episode like 73.
Yeah, so we're approaching.
We're at like 140 now. So
yeah,
I've
so
actually
we're about halfway through.
This is crazy. We're coming up on me producing more podcasts for you than you did for yourself beforehand.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think I got started here about almost exactly a year ago, it feels like.
So in terms of like this being a nice turning point for not only my instruction, but the culture that we're trying to develop through the instruction program and how that affects the overall culture of the club. Obviously not everybody's the same. So like, but if you have a generally sound culture, you can have some freedom to move within that overall structure.
And I think what that does is it establishes trust over time, right? Where the people who are then following that culture really feel like they will go with whatever you put in front of them, right? And,
yeah,
you know, that just goes to show what Brooks has done here, putting on all these events, right? It's like the people who are involved in the culture here will then show up to the events that the club is putting on. And then more so relating that back to you is that your students will then trust you more with their game and
Correct.
Will then provide them lower scores on the golf course.
And the more trust that they build with me, the more trust they build in the entire club and the mission of the place. And so like it's a self-fulfilling cycle of moving this thing down the track and positive energy, and like failure's okay. Like Brooks has established that in how he manages all of the staff here. Like he gives us freedom to make mistakes, which I haven't had in most of my working life. Like you have to do it this way, and you know, and even if it wasn't like you have to be perfect, there was this, the culture that was created, whether intentionally or unintentionally, was like, you have to be perfect. And that's unsustainable. Like, nobody can do that. Nobody can sustain that. And so he's given us the freedom to try and, like, and do things that we do well and make little mistakes and learn from them and move on. Like,
what I love, too, about culture, too, and this especially relates back to, you know, you and I, as we build this thing and how you build this thing for the most part, is that, like, the culture that we end up creating, and I say we, it's more you, but, you know, yeah, all of us here.
You're a part of it, though.
That's true. But and so I guess what I'm trying to say here is that if you can make that culture a winning culture, more people are going to want to be a part of it. But the biggest thing is that the people who are a part of that that culture will then hold each other accountable, depending on, you know, where you set the bar, where you set kind of the, you know, the founding documents, I guess you would say, of that culture, right?
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about that as far as core values go and what you're going to be kind of putting in place for your facility.
Yeah, and I'm not going to give them all out, but I'm going to give a few of those out based on our conversations, a little bit of where I'm trying to go. But, like, here's the other thing. Not only do they hold each other accountable, they're gatekeepers, and they keep others out who will not fit that culture or who will come in and they'll destroy a culture. They will be your gatekeepers for you. They will defend you. And, like, I've seen at private clubs back in other places around the country where you have people who take advantage of the bartenders and, like, create an unsafe environment. And because the culture isn't built there, those employees aren't in a safe space and they end up leaving. Whereas if you have a great culture like this or somewhere else, if you get somebody that tries to push that button, you get all these defenders coming in and go, get out.
I was about to say that too about, like, our bartenders here. Like, you know, if somebody was to come in and be rude to one of our bartenders, I guarantee you there's at least 5 or 6 people at that bar right there that'll, like, step in to, like, then protect that bartender that, you know, the ones that we all know and love. You guys know them. But I was going to say, too, I think culture gets into a dirty place when you make money the gatekeeper. Does that make any sense? Ooh.
Yeah.
I love when you say ooh.
Yeah.
I love when you say ooh.
You know,
that,
like,
dude.
That one, like, because I'm a feeler, like, that one, like just that hit. One got, like, deep into my chest.
When you,
like,
make money the gatekeeper, you then create, it's kind of like the Wild Wild West where it's, like, it's, you know, pay to get in, and then once you're in, there's no ground rules after that. But the cool thing about culture that's created over time is that while money might not necessarily be the gatekeeper, the people who are then involved in it and who are like, well, like, in order to keep up the culture that we've created, we have to then, like, police the rules or the unwritten rules that then happen mm-hmm. here, which I think you see a lot here at Franklin Bridge too with our regulars, is that, like, the people who are regulars here at the club, like, we know everybody. And the cool thing about that is we're not afraid to call people out if people, you know, are messing up.
And sometimes do so, like, nicely. Like, if somebody's had too much to drink and they're just being a, you know, I'm not going to use any derogatory terms, but, like, if they're just making a fool of themselves and creating a ruckus, like, people will come around and just be like, hey, man, like,
let's get you home.
Like, let's get you home. Let's get you out of here.
Get you some water.
So,
yeah.
Like, there's a compassionate edge, but then there's also, like, this hard, no, like, this doesn't belong here edge. Mm-hmm. And Brooks has created that with the people that are already here, and it's wonderful. And the people that aren't engaged in that, and they're just, like, taking the dollars like it's cheap golf, and it's and taking the deal, are really missing out on something that's really, really rich and really growing and can be very beneficial to their, not only their golf life, but, like, their life in general can be very edifying. Ooh, great word.
There you go. Nice. Nice vocab.
Working on my does that pass
it also
ACT?
Makes the, it also makes money not be, like I said, it doesn't make money be the gatekeeper, right? It's like, you can buy into the River Club all you want, but, like, if you're not, you know, buying into the personality, which we're very open and welcome. Don't get that wrong. Like, we will, like, we'll welcome you with open arms. But, like, you know, it makes it so money is not the end of the road as far as, like, you know, the requirements to be a part of this culture that's being created here.
Yeah. And in terms of, like, the instruction side, like, early on, you just advertise a bunch of people, and the people that fit the culture and that fit, I like people that want to work hard,
I like people that, I mean, I like anybody. Like, you can come on out. Like, I'll treat you the same. But the type of culture we're trying to build that's beneficial in, you know, rising tide floats all boats. Like, if everybody's getting better and everybody has this general, like, hard work ethic built into them, if somebody comes in that's a little weak, we'll either pull you along or you'll drop out because you don't fit.
Yeah.
We want you to fit because we know the benefits of, like, what working hard and working through something that's difficult, like, what that does not only for your golf game, but for you as a person, the confidence that builds in you, it's absolutely incredible. And so, like, that's the type of culture we're trying to build here, and a culture of being positive but also being realistic about your expectations. Like, people are like, oh, you're all about positivity. It's like, I am, but I'm also about, like, being able to be self-aware enough to go, hey, I need to work on this. Yes, I'm trying to be confident, but I actually need to work on this too.
It's so cool too when you get to reap the rewards of being a part of that culture.
Yep.
Right? Like, for me, you know, just being so close to you and doing podcasting with you, it's like I get free swing tips, you know, which is cool. You know, that's a part of me being a part of the Scott Hasse culture that you're trying to create. And for the people who are part of the River Club, you know, these events that Brooks is putting on, and you know, theoretically, if you've been here from the start, you're paying the lowest rate for your River Club membership. It's like, it just gives you, like, incentive to stay, man. It's like the culture that's being created here and the benefits that you get to reap because of being a part of a culture and continuing to be a part of it. Like, I don't think talk to anybody here with a River Club membership, and, like, I guarantee you they will, like they're not even considering canceling it. Like, there's just no way.
And if they are, it's for
other
either
reasons.
A financial reason, or they're not using it, or they've been relocated for a job. Like,
right.
They're not like, you know, this isn't a good deal anymore, and nobody likes me here, so I'm leaving.
It's
like,
part
that's
of the
not
reason,
the
too,
reason
why
leaving.
We've, you know, started to kind of, not necessarily cap memberships, but, you know, make it a little bit more difficult, right? Because, like, this place is a place that's worth it if you want to stay, and it's the best place to play golf in Middle Tennessee.
And we've had people join at that new rate.
Yeah.
Which, because they see what's going on. I actually heard two guys talking about it. They're like, you know, I've thought about it, and, like, I know it's much more pricey than it used to be, but, like, I can see where they're going, and I love the things that are being offered here. Like, I'm going to join it. I just heard two guys this morning talking about it. They're like, he's like, you sure? He's like, yeah. It's like, man, I'll probably join too. So, like, you have two guys that are about to join at whatever the rate is, $130 a month.
You know, it's funny because when I...
Because they see the culture that's here, and they want to be a part of that.
And that culture, let's be honest, was not here a year ago.
Brooks was developing it then.
Correct.
But 2 years ago, it definitely wasn't here at
all. If we're going to speak relatively, you know, last year pretty much didn't exist. If you want to think about, like, take it, like, the founding fathers, right, of,
like,
this club.
The first year was, like, let's clean it up and get rid of the things that don't fit. And then last year was really the big, like, let's show you where we're really going with this.
I think the point that I was trying to make, too, is, like, the amount of work that leadership here at Franklin Bridge has put in just in the past calendar year, or just year, sorry, year to date, like, it's just absolutely ridiculous. The amount, like, how many events have we put on? We've put on 10 plus events in the past 365 days. We've seen a boom in membership. We've had to hire more staff here at the club just to keep up with everything. Got a new fleet of golf carts. Like, the stuff that we've done here is just absolutely insane. And if you're not, like, at least considering the River Club for your golf endeavors, like, yeah, you need to be.
One of the coolest things that, you know, I didn't expect to happen, but when Brooks sent the email that the rates were going up a little bit for this spring, not for the, like, overall membership, but, like, the playing, like, here's your rates going up, here are the changes that are coming. Like, he knew that that was going to upset some people, but it's the right business decision to move, and it's the right decision to make it. It's the right time to do it, and for all the places we're trying to go and try to improve the overall experience, it's what needed to be done. But, like, at the end of that email, and either people caught on to it or they didn't, he said, if you have any questions, call me. Here's my cell number. Now, whether you think
Which
that's a wise
crazy.
Business decision to do or not, what matters
Brooks,
is
you're an animal.
What he's saying is, you matter enough to me that if you're upset about it, I want to sit down and talk to you. Like, that's a guy
you want to get behind. And that's a guy you want to work for. And that's a guy that says, hey, I know some of the things I'm going to do are going to upset some of you, but I want you to come and talk to me. And, like, I genuinely want to hear why it bothers you or why it hurts you or why how it impacts you, good or bad, because you matter.
And here's the thing, too. The people who are really around this club and are really invested in the culture, they know that that rate change of, you know, an extra X amount of dollars around is going to benefit them in the next next following year, right? Like, this course is about to be the most beautiful place to play in Middle Tennessee for the price that
it's at. The best place to play in the county.
Yeah, I would say Middle Tennessee as a you know, greater entity. Like,
yeah.
this place is going to be a place that's going to be a championship golf course and is going to have the culture that surrounds it. Like, for example, I went out to I guess this was like a month or two ago. I went out to 12 Stones to go play in, I guess it's kind of northeast Nashville area. And I showed up. The course is beautiful. You know, it's debatably, in my opinion, a more challenging golf course than here at Franklin Bridge. But, like, when we go, like, when I went into that clubhouse, there was just no culture there. You know, there was two bartenders just serving the people at the turn, and you kind of go into the clubhouse, you know, buy your round and you leave. And, like, the thing that I love about Franklin Bridge is you show up to the first interaction that you have with, let's say, Taylor here at the front desk. Like, you get a conversation in that. If you're rolling in right after and Taylor's having a conversation with somebody, you can just, it's one of those things that we talk about with confidence. Like, you just feel the energy in the air. Right?
Yeah.
You just feel the energy in the air.
You
until, like,
leave feeling good.
Exactly. And, like, you'll come here, you'll make the turn here. Not only do you get a free beer or a free lunch, but you roll in here, you just feel the energy of the regulars here. And you know, it's just, you pay for the experience, and the experience is paramount, and the experience here is incredible.
So, no, I agree.
That was a big rant. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm just trying to show the difference between the two kind of experiences that you might get.
Because it's important. So let's talk about the culture that, like, I'm trying to develop in terms of the instruction, because my whole goal is to get you to play better and to enjoy the game more and let that have a positive impact not only on yourself but those that are around you.
Yeah.
And so a couple of those things. I'm not going to share all of them, because I want to leave some of them as a secret.
I mean, if you want to be a part of the culture, you can come on out here.
Yeah, come on out here and experience it. the first one for me, and I'm going to put a core value with the thing that's going to be a requirement.
Okay, sounds good.
First core value, optimism. Here's the rule. No negative actions or words. Your words and actions not only impact yourself, but those around you. And you're either building up or you're tearing down.
Yep.
And there's constructive criticism as a part of it. But if you have negative self-talk or have negative outward action, and even if it's subtle, I'm going to ask you to leave that back practice area. And we're going to address it a little bit in a lesson. But if you can't get it under control, I'm going to ask you to leave the lesson.
Yeah.
And we can come back and we'll start over again. Like, I'm not kicking you out of taking lessons, but there's another person warming up for a lesson or just finished a lesson, and that's going to impact them going forward.
Like, the way that we talked about it in team sports, too, is that everybody really had to be on their best behavior and really buy into the core values of the team, because if not, there's somebody right behind you waiting to take your spot.
Yep.
There's somebody and, like, this goes into, you know, college golf and high school golf and, you know, specifically those two, right? Because there's a set amount of people who can play a week, and if you don't want to have the mindset that week to be able to play at a championship level, then, you know, there's somebody right behind you who I guarantee you is dying to get their shot.
Yeah.
So you got to really grind for your spot, and I think that that's a great practice for us even as adults now who have no who aren't involved in championship golf now, because, like, I feel like it just raises your mindset in other areas of your life too.
Yeah, no, I agree. 4 and 5. 4, core value, humility. Here's how this comes out. Compliment genuine success and encourage those struggling each time you leave your lesson. This is how confidence is built, and it'll also grow in you. Like, if you've noticed that the person next to you is struggling before they start their lesson, be like, hey, you're going to get it. Like, give Scott your trust. Like, he'll get it fixed. Like, work in that environment
I mean, that little subtle thing could mean the world to that one person to know, hey, I'm not alone in this, and I'm working hard too. And if somebody's doing well, compliment them. Like, hey, that's great. Like, that happened today. I had to reschedule one of the lessons because it got so wet back there. They were literally standing in a puddle. I was like, hey, let's just come tomorrow in the morning. And it was Tom Lazenby. And the guy I was giving a lesson to was working really hard on this one movement. And he started hitting it well. And Tom was like, man, you're hitting it great. I didn't ask him to do that. Like, that's just a natural part of the club that we have here.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm proud to call him a student of mine. And what that does, like, and Marcus was a little struggling with that movement just a little bit, but I stayed on him and he started getting it again. Like, that kind of push and encouragement, like, only pushes people.
I think what you did too this winter with the Cracking the Code class.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd be as far along as you are in terms of creating a culture if you didn't have that class.
Because, I agree.
Like, what that class really created was like a core group of people, and like every movement starts with a core group of people, right? I mean, you see that with, you know,
you don't have to do it with 500 people.
No. You just, I mean, need, like, you see that you with the founding, like, fathers of our country, right? You see that with every single movement that's started and been successful starts with a core group of people who believe in the same ideals. And for you, I think that was your cracking the code class, because there's a huge stigma with golf coaches that you show up to a one-on-one lesson, you get your fix, and then you leave, kind of thing. But I think what that Cracking the Code class really did was...
I saw them multiple times a week.
Exactly. You saw them multiple times a week, and I think what it really did was it provided the atmosphere for these students to really understand that I'm not the only person going through this, right? And that's, I think, a terrible thing that happens with one-on-one golf lessons, is especially if you get somebody who's not as skilled... You get a bunch of negative self-talk or negative self-thoughts, especially when you leave the lesson. You're like, man, I couldn't hit it worth crap today. But for you, when you got a bunch of people working on generally the same things, you know, you can push and encourage and be a part of. And you don't even have to do anything. You can stand in the back and watch.
Right.
Yeah, even the times that I showed up, and I showed up a fair amount of times just to observe, like, everybody who was out there was, you know, you could have been gone and they would have been working on the same things.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing. Like, even if they were working on something different, they knew what each person was working on and they didn't interfere with that. And they encouraged them in that, like, hey, you can do better. Mm. Like, hey, you can do more. Like, hey, that was great. You know, like, that, honestly, that was the most exciting group of people that I've ever taught. And I've taught some groups I've really enjoyed teaching.
Yeah.
But there was something different there. And I think, and that's where I started coming up with these five core values and these kind of five rules of the range, if you will, of like, this is really what I want. And not only is this good for me, but it's so good for all the people that come in here. And like, that may do more work for somebody than what I'm doing for them giving a lesson. And when I tell people, like, you can text me, call me anytime. Now, I've worked on my time management, so I may not get to you at that moment, but I'm going to get to you in one of those 3 30-minute segments that I have, and I'm still working on that. Like, those 3 30-minute segments I have every day, like, I genuinely want to know how you're doing. And sometimes people are afraid to, like, share their success. Like, oh, I had such a great round. Like, they'll share it with me, but they won't really tell anybody else other than, like, one or two people because they're afraid of being cocky or arrogant or whatever. But in this group, like, I encouraged out of 16 people, I said, if you have a positive success, I started every class with, is there anybody have any, you know, positives this week, successes? And, like, everybody celebrated that even if it wasn't them.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cool.
And what I think the range rules are really going to do is, like, call them range rules, if you will. I don't even want to call them
range
rules.
Yeah, we'll call them something else.
Because what it's doing is it's providing structure to where you don't necessarily have to police the people that you're teaching, if that makes any sense. Because, like, I think that space is going to be then used for people who really want to get better and take strokes off their game. Mm-hmm. And golf is such a casual yet serious sport that, like, if you show up to that area, like, you're going to abide by the rules of that area and you're going to get better. If you don't want to hit in the private area in the back, because yeah, you're a student of Scott Hassey.
You've got 30 minutes before and you got 30 minutes after your lesson to hit. Or if you come into a clinic and you get there early and want to stay a little late, like, that's fine.
Exactly. But if you don't want to hit back there on the back, and if you're not really going to make your practice hard like we talk about and really work on your game, then you can go and hit off the mats at the top with the with everybody else who goes and buys a large bucket of balls.
I had somebody say this as I was, you know, I've sought some counsel on this and, like, trying to gain some wisdom, like, how do I deliver this? They said, you make it a privilege to come back here and take a lesson. You make it a privilege to be in one of the clinics. You make it a privilege to have 30 minutes beforehand and afterward to continue the work that you've been given. And so,
which we're going to work on as far as the, like, the when you enter the area.
Yeah,
like,
you're going to have an entry point there.
It's going to be like a reflection process to where, like, you got to get it. You're going to get in the zone when you come back, kind of thing.
And when you leave, you're going to see something that's going to help you.
Exactly. Which I think
is going to be a nice reminder.
Which I think is amazing because, I mean, like, going back to, like, my first sentence that I talked about at the first of the podcast, where, like, you see all of these college programs, no matter what it is, it doesn't matter if it's football, golf, baseball, soccer, whatever. They'll have a place for their trophies, a place for where they show off their alumni who've been super successful. And, like, you walk those halls and you want to be one of them. And so you will then push yourself on practice. And so, like,
and it's the things above the locker room door on the way in and way out. Like, you tap it every time.
Well, I was about to say, it's, you know, like, it's like Tennessee, like, right? Like, at Tennessee, no matter where they are. And it's funny too, because when they're at an away game, they will put, they've got a sign that they'll put up above the visitors' locker room door too, and it says, "I will give my all for Tennessee today," and they hit it before every single practice, before every single game. It's like a ritual to go and hit that sign. And so, like, when you're making the act of hitting that sign, you are then thinking of, "I will give my all for Tennessee today," and hopefully you go out and play that way.
And even on days where you're not, somebody there is buying into that, and just that act of doing that kind of connects you to
that. Or when
that
their number
hole.
Gets called, when they're not necessarily starting, when their number gets called, it's a reminder to them that I'm giving my all here.
Well, and I'm going to give the last one, so that kind of leads into my last one. And again, I haven't given you two and three, which are really important, but number five here to kind of cap it off. The core value is courage. I had a hard time figuring out what the word was. I figured out what the phrase is that I wanted.
What's
the
phrase?
I couldn't figure out what the word
was. Give me the
phrase.
But
I like the word courage. Number five, get uncomfortable. The more you stretch your comfort zone, the better you'll get.
Yeah. Amen.
The people who stretch their comfort zone the furthest are the ones who get better the fastest.
Yeah,
every
couldn't
single
agree more.
Time. Now, it is uncomfortable to change. I'm asking you to change. And if we work on mindset as a part of your lesson, which, if you're around it enough, you'll realize that's an important component of it.
Oh my God. Like, wait, can we stop there for a second? Just like real quick. Ooh, excuse me.
I choked. Like a weird, like, hiccup.
Choke. I had like a
cough.
A hiccup choke there.
Deep breath.
Yeah, my bad. But like, you and I talk about mindset a lot. And I think that, like, you and I are both people who have, like, well, you might actually disagree on this because you've said you've worked really hard to get a strong mindset. Mm-hmm. For me, I think I have just a naturally more confident mindset. But for somebody who maybe isn't as confident, I think that that is one thing.
I would say mine's a positive mindset. I've had to work on it being more confident.
Correct. There you go. So, like, what I was going to say is that, like, I feel like you get some high handicappers who come in and trying to work on their game. And they could have, like, a PGA Tour swing, but if their mindset isn't there, they're still going to be a high handicapper. And so I say all that to say I think that sometimes if you just fix your damn mindset, you might be surprised how many strokes you'll take off your game. And the only reason I say that is because I'll link it back into what we're talking about today as far as culture is kingpin, where we can actually teach people to have a better mindset just by them going through the process.
Correct.
And then showing up on the course and really feeling like they have a community, like they have a coach, like they have a mindset coach, like they have whatever to actually go out and play their best golf.
Yeah, no, and this idea of you're not alone in it.
No, exactly. So I only say that to say that I think that's a benefit of the culture that's going to be created too. But talk about courage and like, what's that last thing?
I wasn't like, I just thought, you know, this idea of getting uncomfortable, like, okay, so like, is that work ethic? Is that like, what is this getting uncomfortable thing? And really, the reason people don't get uncomfortable is because they're afraid.
Yeah, they're afraid of failure.
They're afraid of failure. They're afraid they won't be able to do it. They're afraid that the outcome will be bad, which is a lack of trust in me.
Which, newsflash, the
say
outcome
that,
will be bad at some point in your golf career.
Right. Like, here's a phrase that people say sometimes when they take lessons. It's a very common one. After they start hitting them better, you know, hit 4 or 5 good ones in a row, and they're like, if I could just do that every time. Yeah. Newsflash, you will never do that every time. And yeah, that's not a negative statement.
If everybody
that's reality.
Could be if everybody could be a second swing golfer, you could all be on the PGA Tour.
Right, but you're not. And being willing to go through the discomfort of change takes courage. Like the guy I was giving a lesson to, we were just talking about, Marcus. Dude has lost 150 pounds in a couple of years. That's, you know how much courage that takes? You know how much discipline that takes?
Yeah,
you know
a
how
lot.
Much ridicule for people? Like, you'll have lost 100 pounds, and there's probably some dude making fun of you for still being fat. But what that dude doesn't know is that you've lost 100 pounds, and that's a tremendous feat. Like, the negative mindset people will hang on the fact that you still weigh as much as you do. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that. That takes courage to do that.
It's funny too how this might be a little controversial, but we talk about Gary Vee a decent bit. We haven't mentioned him in a long time.
I know. I was really tempted to say something in this episode because like the whole idea of like positivity and self-awareness, it's like that's like the most common thing I share with him. But
he'll talk about how like. And this is specifically talking to like about entrepreneurship, but I think this carries over a lot just in life in general. Is that he talks about how, like sometimes the biggest hurdle for some people to just get over their fear of just doing something or, you know, if I could only or whatever is entitlement.
Mm.
And so I feel like I have been.
The world owes me. This game owes me. I've worked really hard, so I deserve. No, none of that.
Well, even the fact that, like, for example, like, if you come from a higher-end household, right, like, you'll be a, you know, you've got everything to lose.
Correct.
Theoretically, right? And so that's why I'm like, well, you know, sometimes immigrants or people who don't come from as, you know, well-off backgrounds, you'll, like, you'll see all of these people come up and being these crazy multi-billionaire successful CEOs or not even that, but just be successful, period. Like it's crazy how some of these people who quote unquote have nothing to lose have the most to gain.
Right. And they do gain.
Well, and they take advantage of that.
It's funny, like I don't like politics. Like I hate politics as a whole with a passion. I don't even latch on to politicians. But you mentioned that and this is the impact that that guy's had on so many people and just kind of the person that he is, Marco Rubio.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I remember hearing his story about, like, what he's come from and what his parents came from and how hard he had to work.
And a lot of people give him crap just for his political views, which is like, if you spend a day in his shoes, like, you might actually see something.
If you spend a day getting to know Marco Rubio, I think you'd realize how compassionate he is, how hard he works, how, like, his overall morality is very, very, very high. And that's just phenomenal to me, the fact that I don't even like politics. And that guy's story has stood out enough because it matches the type of culture that I'm trying to develop and it matches who I am as a person. And, like, there's a lot of admirable traits there. And I'm sure there are politicians on both sides. This is not a Republican, Democrat, independent
no,
thing. This is
absolutely
strictly,
not.
Like,
but it also begs
Ben
the question,
Carson.
Too. Like, yeah, Ben Carson as well. It also begs the question, too. It's like if we were able to vote for our leaders based on their actual policies and how much we actually believe in that person and not necessarily, like, that their party, like, how different the country might be, too.
Yeah.
It's like, but, and then, you know, bringing this back to golf, too. It's like.
But that happens with golf instructors, too. It's
totally,
like.
Totally.
Like, oh, well, I love this golf instructor's way of doing things. Like, if you could take the heart of most golf instructors, you could take a lesson from darn near any of them. I'm talking about the high quality ones, and you'd get better.
Mm.
And you'd be impacted in a positive way. It's like, well, I just don't buy into that teaching philosophy. It's like, well, you don't have to. There's dozens of other teaching philosophies that are out there, all of which can be equally effective. Like, I have a way of doing it. There are other instructors that have a way of doing it. We're both very successful. It doesn't mean I'm right and they're wrong. Doesn't mean they're right and I'm wrong. Like,
it'd be so interesting, too, dude. I would love to do this experiment where we take 10 PGA Tour players, and this is all like, this is a dream scenario, but we take 10 PGA Tour players, have you coach them for 10 hours, and then have like Butch Harmon coach them for like 10 hours, and like see their...
I'd get my butt whooped, but I'd make a valiant effort.
Right, but I would be so curious just to see what the PGA Tour players would say about like your teaching style versus Butch's.
And there'd probably be some that I would mesh with really well, and there'd be others that I wouldn't at all.
Right.
And there are some that I might get it right, and there's some that I might get it wrong. And like, whether it was right or wrong, we wouldn't know except for the score on the card.
And what I think is crazy too is like, Butch, correct me if I'm wrong, he was never a PGA Tour player.
Correct.
He was never a PGA Tour player.
His dad was.
His dad was. And so that's like why he grew up like watching Armour and Hogan and like all these guys, because they would mm-hmm. come and play on their home turf
yeah.
all the time at Wingfoot.
Yep.
And I just thought that was so interesting when I was listening to that podcast with him, because I was like, dude's never been a PGA Tour player like at all, yet he's the most respected coach in the industry.
And arguably the best at solving a problem faster than anybody else.
Which is crazy.
Even the best teachers in the world look up to him.
Which is absolutely crazy. And all the tour pros do as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's just crazy.
Every tour player that's gone to him has gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
But, okay, then let's relay this back into it, which also.
But he can't take all of them.
He can't take all of them, but it begs the question, too, about the culture that he creates as well.
Right.
Like, he will say, too, he will say, like, he does not care how many players he loses. He does not care. He like, if you feel like, he said this, if you feel like you can go get better instruction for another coach, like, go. Like, just, like, go do it. Like,
I would love to have that character trait.
Like, he just,
I'm working towards it, but, like,
if
yeah.
you think you can find something better, like, go do it. Like, he doesn't care. His job is to make you better when you come to him. And if, yeah. like, and if that's not something that you're interested in doing, then go do it. So there's a story. There's a funny story. And this is a longer podcast, but I actually like where this is going. So, there's a story too about when Ricky Fowler went to Butch, and Ricky kind of calls him up. He's like, "Hey, Butchie, like, can you come out on the range with me, you know, tomorrow morning? And you know, let's work on if we can work on a few things, that'd be great." And Butch was like, "Sure." And so he gets to the range and tells Ricky to work on a few things, and Ricky's just like hosel rocketing and you know. Slicing and doing all these things terribly wrong, and he like brings Butch over and he whispers in his ear and he goes, you know, Butch, like are you gonna make me a damn fool in front of all these people who are like watching?
I remember this story. This is
he's
great.
Like, are you gonna make me a damn fool? And he's like, no, but if you genuinely want to come and get better, like we're gonna come and get better. I don't give a fuck what the people behind me are, you know, what their opinions are. Do my job is to get you to get better. So if you want to do that, like, let's work. But if not, like let's like we're not gonna do this.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was, like, crazy, too, because, like, the culture that he's creating is we are going to get better no matter what it is. And I think that's
and
crazy.
And I don't care how uncomfortable what I ask you to do makes you.
No, and it's crazy that that's happening at the PGA Tour level, because you're dealing with a bunch of egos and fans and everything else where it's like mm-hmm. his culture is getting better at the game of golf. He does not care what anybody else thinks. And I just think that's crazy and, like, in a good way crazy. And
when
it's amazing.
People think when people are at the top, they're invincible. Whether, like, people at the bottom who look up to people at the top, or people in the middle that look up to people at the top, they think they're invincible. When you're at the top, you're in a really interesting position. One of my favorite lines from the band Need to Breathe, they say, "I have found the bottom from the top somehow."
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, the fall from the top happens so quick for so many people. It's so fragile up there. And so, like, you as a coach got to come in with all of that confidence for them, and you may break them in half getting them to where you need to get them to. And you have to be okay dealing with the fact that they're going to at some point probably think you're an absolute crazy person for asking them to do what you because of how fragile it is at the top.
And it's funny, too, how much these tour players will front confidence, right? Because it's the way that they get around the course, right?
You have
even if
and
something's
they are,
wrong.
They are genuinely confident.
Exactly. They are.
Some
but
are
like,
more so
if
than
something
others.
Is wrong, like, for example, in Ricky's scenario, he's probably a little bit more self-confident, or I'm sorry,
self-conscious
yeah. about his, you know, swing mm-hmm. versus when it's in a great position. So, like, yep. he now has to balance this line where he has to come off confident and like an amazing player to all these fans and to the other players around him while still getting a swing lesson from Butch Harmon and Butch is like, well, kid, if you want to get better, like, let's find a time to do it. But like, I'm not going to front in front of all these people. Like, we're going to genuinely work. I'm going to make you better. I don't care what scenario it's in.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
And the other thing about Butch, like, if you don't want to see him and you want to go somewhere else and you get better, he is genuinely happy for you.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's what he said that too. Yeah.
You know, he cares about you getting better, and he understands, like, if you don't have the belief in him as a teacher and a coach, it's not going to work. It can't. It's not possible. And so you got to find something that works. But again, the culture that you put yourself in, and kind of the point I kind of want to tie in with this culture, is if you're in a bad culture, get out.
Ooh.
Do not stay there.
Ooh.
Now, here's one of the things, like, you got on me about some incentivizing and with pushing my time management. But, like, if you're – let's use a college player as an example. You're at a team. You know it's not a good culture. It's not a healthy culture. Do what you can to change it by being a better version of yourself. It's like – and if you're not shooting scores low enough to transfer – use that as your motivation to get better. Like, I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here by changing my mindset. I'm going to get myself around people who are going to help me with my mindset. And I'm going to do what I can to help improve where I'm at and help impact the people around me in a positive way. But I can't spend all my time around them because they will suck the life out of me. Get out of that culture. Now, here's the hard part. This is going to go to Gary Vee. Gary Vee would use a lot more flowery language than I would. But if it's your parents, get out. This is a hard one. Like, especially if you're an adult, your parents don't get to be a part of certain things if they're ruining the culture that's going to make you better. Like, if they're keeping you in a negative mindset, get out. Now, respect them. I think you need to be respectful towards your parents and you need to be loving, but there's certain things that they don't get to engage in and they don't get a voice in. You're an adult. And if you make mistakes, that's on you. That's okay. Making mistakes is part of learning. But, like, get out of that culture ASAP.
It's so funny, too, that he talks about, like, how...
And that's a choice.
It is a choice. He talks about how, like, if you're living off your parents' dime at a certain age, you know, like if you're living under their roof and, you know, they've have financial influences over your life, then, like, you don't get the privilege to be able to make that choice. And you've got to pull yourself to a place where then you can make those decisions for yourself, because obviously you're not affected by anything that they have.
Make new friends.
Yep.
If you're in middle school, high school, make new friends. Find another family that you connect with a little bit. Like I love my parents and I had great parents. But there are certain things that, like, they didn't provide me that I needed in terms of, like, my personal growth. And so I had other mentors in my life, teachers, coaches, parents, and I'm going to do the same thing for my kids. Like, I'm going to make mistakes and not be able to provide them certain things because I'm a flawed human being. I'm not going to be a perfect dad. I'm not going to be a perfect husband. I'm not, like, it's just not going to happen. I'm going to try, but, you know, but I'm going to need people to fill that in. And if one of my kids needs that, something out of that culture that I'm not delivering, I want them to get that from a quality individual. And I'm going to encourage them as such, I hope.
Agreed.
I'm going to have moments I don't. But
I mean, like, the parents' job in paramount is to, you know, watch you become an excellent human being, right? Mm-hmm. And
to do the very best that they can.
Yeah, and that's why I love, like, my parents too, is because they're like, if I can't provide that for you, I want you to go find somebody who can. Right, who mm-hmm. can provide that, and, like, to have the humility to be like I'm giving up my, you know, quote unquote control over my kid because I want the best for them at whatever that might mean, like, and that could be tough love too, you know, that's crazy.
Sometimes it is just the parents being hard on the kids. Sometimes it's a coach being hard on somebody. Sometimes it's like my own students being hard on me about my time management. Like, they love me enough and believe in what I'm doing enough to tell me.
Yep,
that's a loving thing. Although, if somebody who's from the outside and knows nothing about me is like, Hey, man, you didn't return my phone call. Well, when did you call? Sunday. Did you not listen to my voicemail? I'm off Sundays and Mondays. Like, I'm not going to call you till Tuesday. I'm sorry, yeah. but I'm not calling you till Tuesday.
Yeah.
And so if you can't respect that, then you don't belong here.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and all that to say that, you know, culture is kingpin, and that's something that we're really trying to build here. And that's something that Brooks has done a fantastic job of doing at the, you know, the customer facing way. And I think that's something that, you know, you and I are doing through the podcast, through the coaching side of things. Right. And something that you're going to be able to do in the future with some potential great news coming soon. And so I'm really excited to see that happen. So I guess all that to kind of cap off our night here from the back porch of the Persimmon Pub. This was a great long podcast. Scott and I love when we get to do these. We've gotten to do these over the entire winter, honestly, when it was just you and me, just kind of talking about stuff.
Yep.
So now I think we're going to try and do, you know, one of these kind of deep ones a week. And then the two that we have, you know, prior to this one will be kind of outward facing to anybody who wants to come and stay. So today we had some delicious chicken tacos. The week before we had some amazing mini flatbread pizzas, and we got drink specials going all night. We got the best bartenders in the game. So come out here, tip your bartenders, eat some great food, drink some awesome drinks, and come listen to the Champions Playbook podcast. So
I'm going to leave you with, for those that have listened this long, I love words.
There we go.
And
okay.
Like studying words.
Leave us with one sentence here.
Kingpin. Definition.
Okay.
If I'm going to use it, I might as well define it.
Yeah, there you
go. Kingpin. A vertical bolt used as a pivot. This is where you turn from old you and head into new you. Culture is the kingpin. It's the thing that takes what you want that you don't have and turns it into what you want. You can. It's a full 180. The other part of the definition, a person or thing that is essential to the success of an organization, person, or operation. That is a kingpin. So think about, what is the kingpin in your life? Find that kingpin, pivot around it, and go 180 in the other direction towards your best self.
I don't think I can say anything else after that. So it's been Scott and Jack from the back porch of the Persimmon Pub. We'll see you next Wednesday. It's been a fun one here, so make sure to show out next week. We'll see you on the next one. Peace. Thanks, y'all, for listening to this episode of the Champions Playbook. As always, you can find us anywhere that you guys are. So make sure to check out Scott on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of the above. His Instagram is at shasseygolf. That's two S's and two E's. So make sure to go and check out everything that he's got going on over on his Instagram page, as well as make sure you follow Franklin Bridge. Franklin Bridge puts out some great things as well, and we want to make sure that we support them because they support us. So as always, feel free to come by the back porch of the Persimmon Pub at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays to come and listen to us talk golf. So book a late afternoon round of golf, and then afterwards, come on inside, get some food, some drinks. We got some specials going on. We have some $5 flatbread pizzas. We had some amazing chicken tacos, as well as drink specials going on all night long. So make sure to support the Persimmon Pub as well when you come out. We would love to see you guys. We do one episode and then a live Q&A and then another episode. So from 7 to 9 on Wednesdays, we hope to see you soon, and we'll see you on the next one. Peace.